For the most recent episode of The Monica Perez Show, please subscribe to The Monica Perez Show on your favorite podcasting platform. The sprawling agenda of the Iran attack, a Trump trial begins, and could a cancer cure be coming? That and more. The Monica Perez Show starts now. If you're listening live, you know I'm at your favorite video platform every Tuesday and Thursday, 2 o'clock Pacific, 5 o'clock Eastern, with these real newsreels. And we will just get right on with the show. The first big, big story is, since the last time we spoke, is that I think the last time we spoke, we talked about Israel being the likely culprit in a hit on an embassy in Syria. It was Iran's embassy. It killed, I think, 7 Iranian military guys, including 2 generals. And now the expected retaliation has come, and Iran showered hundreds of projectiles onto Israel over the weekend. Basically, none of them got through. I think one person was injured. No one was killed. A very, unexpected story. And of course, I don't think anything is what you see is what you get. So let's figure out what's really going on. I mean, first of all, I consider this all a stage, a play. I'm not saying people don't get hurt and stuff doesn't get blown up. I absolutely know that. It's a very deadly game they're playing. But I do think it's a game. And one of the things that I had realized in an aha moment a little more than 4 years ago, and at the time I was like, this sounds crazy. It can't be true, but look at this. And what it was, I retweeted a tweet from then just today. And the tweet that I sent out today was, the death of Soleimani 4 years ago made it clear to me Iran was controlled opposition and Soleimani was likely not on board with that. The plain psyop justifying leaving his death unavenged clinched it. Now we see Iran enter stage right in what is truly a theater of war. So, and I included in that a tweet from January 2020 where I, you know, that had that aha moment. And what I mean is that, so millions of people seem to have turned out for Soleimani's funeral. We killed him, which is crazy, crazy acts of war. And the expectation was that Iran had to retaliate. Now that I think back, I believe Soleimani, and I remember Pete Q told me like he was truly beloved by the people. And I remember thinking he was beloved by the people. I'm beginning to think Iran is controlled opposition. How does that work? Well, maybe we took that guy out for them or because he wasn't on board, which is why the people loved him. So then I wondered where the retaliation was coming in. And the Iranian government was saved from the obligation to do that by a really, really fishy accident or attack or whatever, where a plane on their runway was accidentally hit by a missile. It was full of like Ukrainians and Canadians and just nationalities that I would think if you were going to have cooperators with a PSYOP, they would be them. And because of that, they were so shamed that they couldn't retaliate for the Soleimani thing, which was a massive act of war, as is this thing that happened in Syria. Now, Israel has not taken credit for that. And I'm wondering if we've got another shoe to drop on that one. I'll get into the whole thing as we go on. But now I'm totally convinced that Iran is, you know, I don't know if you want to call it controlled opposition or what. And I always wondered also, what beef does Iran have with Israel? Just this undying love for Palestinians, this just heartbreaking love for Palestinians. They're not even affected by, well, I don't know about this, but they're not close to there. So I would assume that refugees flooding out of Palestine would be going to neighboring places and maybe always have been. I don't think Iran is particularly affected by that. And it's always described as an Islamic country. And yes, but a lot of Iranians think they're Zoroastrian, or at least maybe those are the ones who get out, like the ones that I know. I don't know. But, you know, I just the whole thing seems weird. And so I thought if they are going to be controlled opposition, why would it be them? And my thinking was, because it's far away. It's not even an Arab country. So you could really, if you were going to have a war from one side to the other, it kind of encompasses the entire Middle East. You know, it's just an idea that maybe that's what's going on there. And then when I heard Israel's reaction, so I've read like at least 10 articles on different subjects pertaining to this Iran strike and Israel's reaction and all the things. So I have like 5 possible agenda items for this thing happening the way it did. But the kind of punchline on one of them is there was many, many articles over the past several days, like how will Israel respond because the other Arab countries and the United States came to their rescue. They're a lot more compliant with our wishes. They're not going to step out of line like they had been. And we, I highlighted a, you know, I don't even know why I highlighted this, but it said, it just kept coming up like this same language. It said, Israel intends to punish Tehran for the drone and missile barrage that represented Iran's first ever direct attack on its territory, Israeli officials said, but it faces a difficult challenge of finding a way of doing so that avoids further escalation, preserves the partnership that helped fend off the assault, and doesn't derail its war aims in Gaza. So I'm thinking that, so it was up in the air how they were going to respond. Then it comes out, just before I went to air, it was not in my newspaper this morning, they are probably going to not hit Iran, but hit some of its proxies closer to home. Now, that just bothers me for a couple of reasons. That's always bothered me because there's a difference between allies and proxies, and they never offer definitive proof. There's no international court, open court with evidence of what, you know, defining a proxy, what is a proxy. There are declarations of war saying that these people deserve to be bombed or whatever. But that satisfies my mind in a couple of ways because they get to do what they want, which is actually operate closer to home. Like if you look at maybe Israel's expansionist goals, like that Oded Yinon plan, I don't think Iran is in it. It might be, but I don't think so. But I think like Syria, Lebanon, Jordan, they're in there. And I assume that's what they're saying. Yemen now is, you know, they say is an Iran proxy. And so Yemen and Syria are attacked for their strategic reasons that other people like Saudi Arabia attacks Yemen and Syria, you know, we've been all over them and blah, blah, blah. So it's reasonable for them to make an alliance with a non-aligned country. I mean, not one that is actually, you know, our puppet, but maybe they don't know that. So, I mean, there's a difference between an ally for a defensive reason and a proxy of with offensive goals. So, but regardless, this is an excuse for that. This, I think they are using that this for an excuse, which completely validates my thinking of the role that Iran is playing. And so it allows the expansiveness of these operations, allows them to expand. It's already said in the newspaper that Iran is now operating in like 4 theaters, and they conflate like geographic areas with political entities, with terrorist entities, with everything. So they're like Hamas, Hezbollah, West Bank, and now Iran. So that's what they're considering their theater of war. But if you, once you include Iran, that really expands it. But now that, so here's the other narrative that was weird for me. Israel has an Iron Dome. It's such a well-protected country. Its defenses are ridiculous. I mean, they've always been hailed as their amazing defenses, and they like put civil rights and everything on the backseat of, they put surveillance and everything in place purely for security reasons, and they're effective at it. I don't actually think they needed anybody else's help. Plus, again, I feel like this thing was totally orchestrated, and I'll tell you why. So I'll just tell you what their system looks like. This was straight out of the journal. Israel used all three of its multi-layered overlapping air defense systems on Saturday, most of which were developed alongside the U.S. beginning in the 1980s, so 40 years. The Arrow 3 intercepts long-range ballistic missiles that leave the Earth's atmosphere, while an earlier version of Arrow is still used for medium to long-range missile threats. David's Sling covers short to long-range missiles, drones, and aircraft. The Iron Dome, its most well-known system, specializes in dealing with shorter-range attacks. That's what should have been able to fend off the hang gliders. Maybe Iran should have just used hang gliders. So I don't think they needed Bahrain's help, and I don't think they needed our help. I think they've gotten our help for 40 years just so that they can defend themselves. But there's a little bit of a smoking gun tell. One of my British listeners, thank you very much, sent me a link to an article. MimiAF, MIMIAF.com is her website. She's got a Substack. And it was actually about the British royals that I read her first article, but she had a good article about this. It said, always look a Trojan horse in the mouth. It was about this Iranian thing. I'll put it in the show notes. This is a quote from her article. She said, as a native Israeli, highly skeptical of his government, said on Twitter in the aftermath of the Iranian assault, I don't think anyone got hurt or injured in Israel. I think there's like one person got injured. I actually think there was a big media propaganda to instill fear in people. I'm not saying the attack didn't happen, but last night, the entire Middle East, including Israel, Jordan, Egypt, Syria, Lebanon, and Iraq, shut down their airspace. And guess what? This morning, they all reopened it again. If Israel did not know that there were no more attacks, they would never have opened the airspace. I don't know about you, but it seems like a big show, a circus, a clown effing world. So that happened with the Benghazi thing, too. It's like, well, I think the Panetta, I think, was the defense secretary or whatever, when asked why he didn't send help, he said, well, the attack would have been over by the time it got there. I mean, that's not why you don't send help. That's what you say in retrospect. Well, it would have helped anyway. You don't say, well, that's why. Because I had the time, I had the clock in front of me, and I saw that by the time. No, these things are not funny at all. I mean, you got to laugh because they're ridiculous, but they're only ridiculous if you actually dig in a little bit. So let's keep digging in. It is being used to justify these alliances and our involvement over there. And of course, our funding. That's the first order of business. So we've been having a terrible time, our lawmakers, on agreeing to whatever it is, you know, $100 billion, whatever the latest is, of this package that our effing tax money, I don't know. Like, do we have to go to hell because we can't stop them from stealing our money and using it to kill people? Like, it really drives me crazy. And I think if I were a standalone person and not, you know, member of a family, if I were a sole decision maker, I mean, I would not be able to sleep at night doing anything but being a tax protester. So the package was for Ukraine, Taiwan, Israel, one other thing. Oh, I think maybe it's the Retro Act. Is that it? To seize corrupt Russian oligarchs' assets. That's something else they want to spend the money on. They want to spend the money on sending this, especially the Taiwan thing. I don't want to address right now, and I think they're actually going to pull this thing apart. So the Senate passed a bill to spend all this money on those regions, and Johnson, the Speaker of the House said he thinks under tremendous pressure from left and right to get money to Israel to replenish their depleted defenses, I think we're going to split this up. We'll still get the Ukraine thing done. We'll get the Israel thing done right now because this is our obligation. I don't understand why it's our obligation, except for the fact that we provoked these wars. But the funding bill had stalled. And now, I mean, I can read you some quotes. Iran's attack injected new urgency into Congress's attempt to shore up Israel's defenses. Many Republican and Democrat lawmakers lined up squarely behind Israel, pledging immediate support. Yeah. Now, Biden, apparently, his PR woman said he's not going to go for a split up bill, but I'm sure. I have a hunch that the money will get where they want it to go. So, yeah, Schumer says the best way to help Israel rebuild its defenses is to pass this bill immediately. Oh, by the way, this reminds me, the last time we talked, I said, hey, like, all these science points, World War III, it's probably going to be mostly a virtual screen thing with fuckery behind the scenes instead of, like, this real all-out 60 million casualties war. But that they were definitely going to blow off some weaponry because they have it. And how else do you build more if you don't get rid of the old ones? Like literally to the point where I don't even know where they store it all. So I'm sure Israel blew off a lot of materiel, as they say. Maybe, you know, we want to do it too. So I don't know. It's awful because they actually do, unlike what happened in Israel, other people do get hurt. Like this, when Iran hit Israel, nobody got hurt, but anyway, people are going to get hurt. Another quote, the Intelligence Committee chair, Ohio Rep. Mike Turner said, I think these bills will have overwhelming support, both the Ukraine, Israel, and Asia packages, not just because of what's happened with Iran escalating the conflicts in the Middle East in response to their embassy getting hit, but whatever. But because these are allies that need and deserve our support. Again, allies are legitimate allies who deserve your support, are ones who could help you in defense against your enemies. And I want to understand how Ukraine and maybe Israel is doing anything but causing us problems, you know, creating the possibility of us to be involved in wars that are thousands of miles away. Oh, and by the way, that Repo Act, Trump says that he wants to use Russian oligarch assets to fund the Ukraine war. And this is just like the proxy thing. Whoever it was that said corrupt Russian oligarch assets, I forget who I heard on the radio saying that, some congressman. Corrupt Russian oligarch assets, we're going to seize them? Are these people getting a trial? Are they any more corrupt than the rest of these people? But that's just a different story altogether. But yes, it's a thing like the proxy. Without process, without evidence, without really an open trial, more or less, you can't steal or kill. It's not okay. Here's like a more deeper thing is that, so I've been thinking of, like, there's such a surge in anti-Israel sentiments, just open Israel bashing. And I remember when I was on WSB Radio, which was a conservative station, maybe it's still, well, I don't even think it's conservative anymore, really too much, but just like to say anything negative about Israel, like the whole, you know, force of the audience even would come down upon you. And now, I mean, it's just unleashed to the point where it's almost expected. And I was thinking, you know, this can't be the long-term plan. You know, Israel has a lot of allies here, political, media, you know, academic. Like, this just cannot be the long-term plan because I think everything's controlled. So I don't believe that these things just emerge organically in a zeitgeist sweeps because of the control of the media, could have absolutely ignored all the pro-Palestinian protests. But they, I've said from the beginning, why are they getting so much oxygen? So you could say, well, you know, you can use victimhood status, anti-Semitism or racism or whatever, transphobia or whatever. You know, you can definitely leverage victimhood status. That is possible. But if they are if these anti-Israeli sentiments are based on this war, how are they on the atrocities in Gaza? How are they going to regain the moral high ground? And I kept wondering, like, how are they going to justify what they are doing in Gaza? But I know some people think that that October 7th attack is justification for this, even though it's grossly disproportional. But again, I think everything's a false flag, so I don't think of it that way. But they aren't going to go and justify the Gaza thing. They have already begun to use the Iran attack as just a like a layer of victimhood on top. So kind of just bury the other stuff, and this restores that kind of moral high ground because victims are heroes, you know? So, but this isn't just me making it up. This is right out of the journal. It says, Iran did what no other political actor could do, changing the narrative around Israel from bully to victim and rallying the sensible international center to Israel's side. In doing so, they gave Biden a temporary gift and some breathing space to find a longer-term solution to the Gaza war. So that's it. That's what I was thinking. And that's it in a nutshell right there. I actually might have to read that again. Iran, and I can't see who it was. This was in an article. I don't know who was saying this. Israel had created enormous political trouble for Biden. Then Iran attacked. That's the name of the article in the journal. Iran did what no other political actor could do, changing the narrative around Israel from bully to victim and rallying the sensible international center to Israel's side. In doing so, they gave Biden a temporary gift and some breathing space to find a longer-term solution to the Gaza war. So I don't think Iran is going out of its way to give Biden a gift or is stupid enough to not know. Anyway, I've told you what I think. Oh, in that article was something that annoyed me. Two other things, actually. One thing was Iran's attack on Israel could embolden Hamas to refuse a ceasefire. So another agenda item for the attack could be to prolong the agony, to just keep it going. But this was just super annoying. This is Ari Fleischer. Remember Ari Fleischer? He's about as deep state as they get. Peace and quiet. This is just a complete inversion. This is the exact opposite of the truth. My father always taught me, presidents like wars because if you're in a war, you get reelected. He says, peace and quiet benefit incumbent presidents, said Ari Fleischer, who served as press secretary for Republican President George W. Bush. Turmoil, violence, and a growing sense that international events are out of control hurt incumbents. Was that his experience working for George W. Bush? I don't think so. So let's see, what else? I think also another thing that it did was it restored faith in the relationship with Israel, because now that we came to their rescue, they are like not just popping off and retaliating. They're waiting to powwow with us and their Arab allies. And, you know, because for a while there, they were kind of going rogue and we were telling them to do one thing and they weren't doing it. But I think we got them back in line now because we proved we're an invaluable blah, blah, blah. let's see. So one other thing, there was an article. I didn't care about that headline. Germany urges China to press Ukraine talks. But there were two little tidbits in there that I thought were interesting. A negotiated end to the Ukraine conflict, now in its third year, is unlikely in the near term. Kiev has said it would accept nothing short of a complete Russian withdrawal and reparations. Moscow says it expects to keep large chunks of Ukrainian territory that its armed forces now occupy. It's funny because I don't know if you ever heard of Tejas and Donbass. It's an American guy who went like in 2014 to go fight with them. And he used to make reports that you could find on YouTube. I think they might have been discontinued, interfered with. But right in the beginning, 3 years ago, he said they've already negotiated the outcome here and they're just going to divide it along the Dnieper. Is that how you pronounce it? The river that goes through Kiev. And the east goes to Russia and the west goes to the U.S. And maybe if it turns out that way, I'm going to definitely give that guy a hat tip. Well, I give it to him now. Hat tip for that, because it certainly still seems to be the plan. All right, here's something that in that article too that annoyed me, which was this. While Russia now has the upper hand, the front line hasn't shifted markedly in months, and there is little prospect of one side scoring a decisive military victory over the other soon. That actually feeds into the idea that they're just going to split it up. This and the spiraling costs of the war make it likely that its end will have to be negotiated sooner or later. So why do we want to give it more money? Why? Why? It's not right. Okay. Trump. This was something... It folded into that a little bit, too. I can't remember how this folded into it. But anyway, Trump's hush money trial began yesterday, if I'm not mistaken. And the accusation, I had to look it up like so many times. Listen to this nonsense. I got this out of Wiki. The people of the state of New York versus Donald Trump is a current criminal trial against Donald Trump, the 45th president of the United States. He faces 34 felony charges of falsifying business records relating to payments made to pornographic film actress Stormy Daniels to ensure her silence about an earlier alleged affair between them. 34. Oh my gosh. Trump is accused of falsifying these business records with the intent to violate federal campaign finance limits, unlawfully influence the 2016 U.S. presidential election, and commit tax fraud. The charges carry a maximum sentence of 20 years in prison if Trump is convicted on 5 or more counts. 20 years in prison! Trump is the first U.S. president to be indicted. Okay, a couple of things. Nothing in me believes that he slept with her, any porn star, or any prostitute at any time for two reasons. He is a notorious skinflint. He's cheap. He ain't paying for it. Mm-mm. He doesn't have to. He's talked about it. He's not doing it. And more important, he's a germaphobe. Hardcore germaphobe. If you listen to my show in WSB, you remember I lived in New York, not far from where he lived at the time, kind of near Columbus Circle. So I was at what was like a Korean mart, whatever, like the little grocery store. And he was there with some super giant bodyguards. And not that he wouldn't have done this anyway, but it like totally fed into the stories I heard of how he would just point at women in the audience of like whatever baseball game and have his guys go proposition them for him. And then also that he didn't like to touch things because he was a germaphobe, because he walked through the store and he was pointing at the different bags of chips that he wanted. And these big giant bodyguards were gathering up his snacks and bringing him to the counter. But so regardless, that is not proof that he is a skinflint germaphobe. However, I think he is. And I think Bill O'Reilly used to say that. They used to go get milkshakes at the whatever game because he doesn't drink and he'd never pay, even though he was the billionaire, supposedly. I don't think he was a billionaire at the time. Okay, so that there's that. Also, this guy doesn't care what you think. He was a philanderer. He has 6 children by 3 wives. Is that him? Isn't he that? Doesn't he have 6 children, 3, 4, 5, at least 5 children by 3 wives? Do you really think he's going to bend over backwards to shut her up? He would just insult her and discredit her. Anyway, whatever. I don't know. I could be wrong. But this kind of stuff does seem a little farcical, especially like my litmus test for any of these criminal trials is show me the hard time. And I said the same thing for Michael Cohen, who went to jail, and some of these swirling stories. He was the go-between between Stormy Daniels and Donald Trump and whatever. He did not serve a full sentence or even like a normal truncated sentence. He got out early. I mean, it was probably cush where he was. I don't know. Anyway, but here is an interesting question. What would happen if he were in jail while he was president? Would the VP be the president, the de facto president? Is that how it would work? It's unknown at this time. I think it's unknown. Well, it's certainly unprecedented. So that makes me wonder who is going to be the VP. Then the last I heard, people who were in the running were Tim Scott, Kristi Noem, Byron Donalds, Elise Stefanik, Tulsi Gabbard, J.D. Vance. I don't know. Kristi Noem has those guns, so maybe they want like a good-looking chick. Elise Stefanik, I wouldn't be surprised. I think she's from New York. I'm gonna say it's gonna be her. Yeah. I don't know. There was an article today that the jury pool is all Democrats. Oh, well, let's do some comments and then we'll get to some more stories. Okay, what do we got here? Yes, Harry agrees with me. He's saying Iran is justified, which would be based on the act of war of attacking their embassy, but Israel didn't admit it. I expect a shoe to drop on that. He said it is a total play and they are a controlled opposition. But people weren't saying that 4 years ago. Oh, here you go. The Wild Urban Gardener says, excellent thoughts on Iran. No doubt, similar to all other major countries, they all supported COVID. They all support CBDCs. It's all theater. Yeah. CIA does love itself some Persia. Yeah, maybe true. Yeah, allies v. proxies. Of course, as with all of anything that's theatrical in nature, I try not to assume people aren't getting hurt, even if the thing is a setup. But Kelvin is saying that most of the Gaza footage comes from the Hollyweird film sets around Cyprus. It's awful theater, bread and circus. A few people have mentioned that to me. I avoid that stuff because I find violent images disturbing. I'm the one those like warnings are for. Except for a lot of times I think they're fake, so I'll just like push right in. But I'm not convinced this is fake. But Harry seems to be agreeing with Kelvin. But he does say the Iron Dome is incredible. But Kelvin says there is no such dome. Oh, is Harry saying it's not credible? Or is he saying it's incredible? There you go. And Stella points out, as I also have, it is not called the theater of war for nothing. Yep, and the fact that the airspace was reopened is a bit of proof. Yep, James says, puppet show with cute new missiles this week only. Shot down 98% of our attack dollars. 98%, our tax dollars, hard at work. Just more fun. Again, puppet show royal. Yep, they're pumping money out to launder it. I agree with that, especially Ukraine. Not just launder it, but get it. Yeah, I mean, get it to where it needs to be. Yes, agreed. Yes, Stuart is praying for world peace. One of my mother's last words. It was certainly her last message to the audience. Tell your listeners I love them and to pray for world peace. Oh, is that a fact? Stefanik is not well-liked, not even among New York Republicans. But what does he care? You know what I'm saying? Stella, you're here. She says, I've definitely noticed the footage with silicone bodies and babies. I hope so. I hope it's fake. Stella, I was looking at the two stabbings in Australia, back-to-back stabbings, and the one in the mall, that looked staged. I mean, I'm sorry, but what do you think? I wanted to talk about that. Let's just talk about that right now. So the Australia story is this. So there were knife attacks in a mall near Bondi Beach. Looks like Bondi Beach, but I think it's Bondi Beach. It's a Westfield mall. I guess that's an international company. Stabbings of, and there were also stabbings of the clergy on an altar in a Christian Assyrian church, which also looked not real to me. And okay, so the first one was, guy runs in, 40-year-old mentally ill guy, runs into a mall, stabs people, kills five women and one man and injures 12 other people. Kills. I believe George Harrison was stabbed 40 times and was not killed. I'm just saying, to kill six people stabbing in a public place is not credible for me to believe. Just don't believe it. And then so I went to look at the video, which I do normally avoid, especially if I think it's real, but I didn't think it was real. So when I saw it, it didn't look real to me. Now, I don't, you know, I'm sorry if I offend people. Let me know what you think. Let's see what Stella says. I interviewed G. Edward Griffin once. Oh, yeah. It says a police officer, of course, and several bystanders are being hailed as heroes as they ran toward danger and stopped the knife attack. It must have taken them a while. That's all I got to say. Now, the church stabbing looked stage two, and then it happened at night, and the cops apparently remained inside the church where nobody died with the suspect for hours. And during that time, a mob of 500 people showed up and started chanting, "Bring him out." And more people were injured in the riot than in the stabbing. Anyway, that is considered an act of terrorism. It seems like some Muslim stuff is involved and Christian stuff. I don't know. Seems a little. So I'm not getting the answer from Stella. You know, true or false, real or fake. All right, what else were we going to talk about? Oh, I was going to tell you about the ivermectin thing. So I love our community and all the people who reached out to me when I had to not do a live show on Thursday because my sweet, adorable, fluffy Delilah fell apart, couldn't walk. She wasn't horrible. You could just see she had just tumors and stuff on her spine. And I just could not, like, once that happened, once she just, like, could not walk, of course, you can't leave them like that. But she's so cute and fluffy. Anyway, it's terrible. And I just forgot how awful it is to have to put your dog down. I can't even say it. Like, it just seems so wrong. Although, as my husband explained, he's like, you're not playing God. It is your responsibility from God to husband these animals. And, you know, in a state of nature, she would rot and be mauled. Like, you can't, it's not okay. So, but it's so hard to do. And then it took me like 4 days to get over it. Like, I'm not totally over it, but like, I was really thrown for a loop. And I'm not gonna, you know, I've tapping into the Irish. Don't want to get emotional, but the fact that people do this all the time, I mean, you should definitely get a week off of work for that. Like, I don't think I can, I have another dog, but I don't know if I can handle doing that again. But here's the thing. So thanks to Joe, he told me about ivermectin, which sounds like a cure-all panacea, but then I looked into it and ivermectin is in human trials for cancer, for controlling tumors. It's amazing to me. Like, and it's been effective, and it's absolutely been effective against in dogs for mammalian, you know, mammary tumors, which is what my dog had. That was her original cancer because she had been a failed breeder, and I guess they gave her so many drugs that, you know, it leads to that. I also gave her some allergy medicine, which, you know, I'm not big into the pharma. But she was like licking her paws to death. And that's when she started getting lumps. And the doctor was like, oh, yeah, they can turn cancerous. I was like, why didn't you tell me that? So I have some regrets, obviously. But here's the thing. There's a point to my story. Is that so I looked into the ivermectin. And I told a friend of mine who has cancer, who's like kind of running out of chemos to do. And she asked her doctor, and her doctor said, yes, they're having a lot of success in the trials and that they would get her into the next trial available to her. And I thought that was great. I'd gladly sacrifice sweet Delilah if my friends can, you know, if the only reason I knew about it was not for Delilah, but for my friend. But here's what I was thinking. And I was talking to my gal, Ellen, who's a big friend of the show, the one with the t-shirt that said I impeached Gavin Newsom, which is how we got to be friends. Long story. I've told it like 10 times. So I was walking with her and I was saying, you know, can you believe it? Like, if they have a cure for cancer, like, what is that going to do to the cancer industry? And she said, well, what aren't they coming out with a vaccine against cancer? What was that going to do to the cancer industry? And I was like, don't they come out with vaccines once the cure is found? Isn't that what happens? Have you ever seen those graphs of like the most touted vaccines? When you look at the incidence of the disease, it's already on a downward slope, and the vaccine is introduced after that. That, you know, what do you call that? The angle of the slope is already well established and does not seem to accelerate or steepen in any way because of the vaccine. It's almost like, maybe they didn't do it in the past, maybe they aren't doing it, but they might could only roll out vaccines after they know that the disease is going to be controlled. And then follow on to that, COVID spikes it, right? COVID or the vax or both seem something spiking. A lot of things are probably spiking it. But so now you have this big spike and then it'll back off as those cancer cases aren't new cancer cases, right? So assuming that there was a surge because of this environmental factor that has in itself diminished, then you already have it going down. And if they were like, they're maybe demonizing ivermectin to slow the roll because they knew that that was really where its power lay, but they know it's coming. So how do you make lemonade out of that? Sell the vaccine twice a year to 7-8 billion people. I mean, I'm not saying I like saw the memo. I'm just saying what to watch out for could be, but it would be great to have. I mean, I wouldn't go near an mRNA vaccine with a 10-foot pole, but you know what? This show is going to get taken down. Damn it. So, but it would be great if the ivermectin worked, and this is a real regret. I didn't realize if you buy the horse one, you can buy it on Chewy, Chewy. Like, you don't need a prescription for it if you buy it like in that nasty. I mean, it seems difficult to manage the dosing, but I could have done it for my dog if I had caught it in time, but it was just way too late, it seemed. So I thought that was interesting. Let's see. Okay, so it's about time. I guess I'm going to have to table a few of these other stories. Nothing so exciting anyway. But I do have an interesting clip for you, which I had played on the radio like probably 10 years ago. Did not make me very popular on that station. But now, I mean, I've seen it make the rounds, like the world, like the atmosphere is so different now. But I want to, the clip really speaks for itself. I'll tell you who this person is, and then I'll let you listen away. Okay, this person is Patrick Lyle Clawson. He's an American economist and Middle East scholar. He is currently the director for research at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy and senior editor of Middle East Quarterly. Now, I have in the show notes at monicaperezshow.com the complete unedited video of Patrick Clawson's responses to questions regarding U.S. policy toward Iran at a policy forum in Washington, D.C. on September 21st, 2012. So it's 12 years ago. I'm not saying it pertains to our current situation, but it's just telling nonetheless. And this is an excerpt from that full video. So I will, before I leave you with that, I'd like to say a couple of things. One is I have been using, which one am I using? It's so yummy, Hypnotica. I've switched and I like the ones that you can put in water. So I'm talking about TrueM Science, TrueMScience.com. My only sponsor. I love them. They were sponsors of me even when I never plugged their show. They just love me and us, and they are part of our community. But the CBD products are unbelievable quality. There's no doubt in my mind there is no better quality CBD, and I've never had anything as good. but actually they're the only ones I ever really used. I've used stuff before that's like, this doesn't do anything. That is not what you get from this. You actually have to proceed with caution. It actually says on the bottle, like, start slow and start low and roll slow, something like that. And you do, you have to. You have to take it seriously. It's a natural product. But this just, I love it. It's, what they say is, it's an excellent end of the day relaxation tool that may inspire a lifted sense during your evening routines. And for me, it's such a help to sleep. They have lots and lots of products. I have a promo code, Monica, and I'm sure this is already used up. First 100 customers to spend $80 or more get a free sample bottle of Hypnotica. But I talked to Chris and you can just write. There's a lot of different things that have samples. There's like Doze, Bliss, I don't know. If you write in the message that you would like a free sample of something and you know what it is, or just, you know, surprise me, just write it in there. And he said he will include it. And if, you know, if you have any doubts, you can just call them, but go to truehempscience.com and use the promo code Monica. And if you would, for me, my goal in kind of resurrecting the show is just to leverage my work. If I ever make any surplus dollars, I will just use them to promote the show. So you can listen and listen through the commercials, or if you want to give me a little extra, you can go to iTunes and become a premium subscriber, or very best thing would be rockfin.com/Monica Perez. But you know, basically the most important thing is if you would share the show to someone who you think would enjoy it, or someone you know used to listen to me and doesn't know I'm doing this right now, think there's a lot of that. I would love to make the most of this effort. And I really enjoy spending this time with you. So thank you very much for that. And now back to the clip.
I frankly think that crisis initiation is really tough. And it's very hard for me to see how the United States president can get us to war with Iran. Which leads me to conclude that if, in fact, compromise is not coming, that the traditional way of America gets to war is what would be best for U.S. interests. Some people might think that Mr. Roosevelt wanted to get us into World War II, as David mentioned. You may recall we had to wait for Pearl Harbor. Some people might think Mr. Wilson wanted to get us into World War I. You may recall he had to wait for the Lusitania episode. Some people might think that Mr. Johnson wanted to send troops to Vietnam. You may recall he had to wait for the Gulf of Tonkin episode. We didn't go to war with Spain until the USS, until the Maine exploded. And may I point out that Mr. Lincoln did not feel he could call out the Federal Army until Fort Sumter was attacked, which is why he ordered the commander at Fort Sumter to do exactly that thing, which the South Carolinians had said would cause an attack. So if, in fact, the Iranians aren't going to compromise, it would be best if somebody else started the war. One can combine other means of pressure with sanctions. I mentioned that explosion on August 17th. We could step up the pressure. I mean, look, people, Iranian submarines periodically go down. Someday one of them might not come up. Who would know why? We can do a variety of things if we wish to increase the pressure. I'm not advocating that, but I'm just suggesting that this is not a either or proposition of, you know, it's just sanctions has to succeed or other things. We are in the game of using covert means against the Iranians. We could get nastier at that.